From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, Senior Lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is Dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Dr. Luddite Pope.
So you know what's coming, but the audience doesn't. Let me fill them in that this is a very exciting show because we don't have a guest. We don't need a guest because we have an expert here. Yeah.
I don't need no stinking guest.
That's exactly right. So Dan Schwartz is our expert of the day on something called artificial intelligence. And it is my pleasure to interview Dan. And as we were prepping for this, we realized that I don't even know enough about artificial intelligence to even ask questions that would be good to ask of Dan. So really, Dan is going to interview himself, and I'm going to chime in when appropriate.
Let me correct you just a little bit. I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
Okay. Yeah, which does not take a lot. So, I'm excited because I have been doing a little bit of reading about it.
Did you?
Well,
did you?
Just good for Brooke, you. Brooke gave me one article, so now I feel. Yeah. But I at least know that AI does not stand for artificial insemination, which is a step in the right direction.
I'm not an expert in that either.
But I think many people are probably in my shoes.
Yeah.
I think many people don't know what it is. When I think of AI, I think of the Blade Runner movies, and I think of like human robots walking around, and I think of that movie where the man falls in love with his computer, and she is talking just like she was his girlfriend, and he carries her with her everywhere, and then we find out she's got like 13,000 other people who she's in such an intimate relationship with as well.
Okay.
And now you know everything I know about AI.
So it is hard to predict what the future will be. So science fiction is, sometimes it's right, like Dick Tracy and The Watch. We now have The Watch.
We do. We have The Watch.
So let me ask you a simple question. Do you think the robots can replace teachers?
I do not think robots can replace teachers. I am someone who firmly believes in the power of a human teacher. Now, I could be wrong because maybe years from now, robots will be able to do this. But here's what I think the human adds in the classroom. They can look at a kid. They can read their cues, their facial cues. They can kind of say, hey, this person's not, if I push them a little bit further, it's going to break them. That's not going to work. They can have an idea of the tone of the room. They can kind of see what's going on, big picture. They can do what Elliot Eisner would say is the art of teaching. They can really do things that a machine can't do.
I'm going to blow your mind on this one.
Can they do that? Are you telling me it already exists?
It's starting.
So
I think sometimes people think about that. I mean, we do have online instruction that's basically all computerized. You can watch videos of people. We can make movies that they look like people, and so you could capture a lot of that. So I would. The idea of a robot feels really cold.
Yeah, it does.
So good to separate out two things, and then I'll give some examples of what AI is doing in education. So education is a little later to the game. AI is really showing up in medicine. You create algorithms that are very good at diagnosing x-rays, for example, or cars, where they get lots of input, and the cars are now becoming more and more autonomous. Mm-hmm. They don't need the driver as much. Education, it's been slower to get into, in part because we don't have as much organized data. So here's the question for you, and we're going to separate out what is it we think makes something intelligent from kind of the algorithms that execute stuff.
Okay.
So what do you think makes something intelligent?
What makes something intelligent?
Like you want your child to be intelligent. What is it you mean?
They can think critically about something. They can discern sort of faked facts from real facts, or they can synthesize. I'm kind of thinking Bloom's taxonomy here. They can analyze, summarize, synthesize. What makes them intelligent? They can learn. They can learn from their mistakes.
Can I just take a moment to point out that Bloom's taxonomy has zero research base?
Okay.
It's in every ed psych textbook, this triangle.
It is. And it's been revised, the revised Bloom's taxonomy, it's all over everything.
But, you know, the things people often interpret that you should learn the bottom level first and then the, you know, basics and then work your way up and creativity is at the top. Oftentimes, it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Nice.
So this kind of ordering thing is...
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
Intelligent. It's okay. I would say someone can learn, someone can think, someone can problem solve. Well, I guess computers can do that. But
yeah, a calculator. Is a calculator smart?
Okay. But a calculator, I push in the numbers and it does some kind of algorithm. But it's not thinking on its own. So I would say no.
Thinking on its own. Who's doing the calculation? That
it's not thinking on its own. No, it's running an algorithm. It's not learning. It's not learning from the algorithm.
So learning is the key.
Yes, I would say that.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No. The classic test is something intelligent is imagine you're working on a computer screen. And you don't know whether on the other side of that computer is a person or a machine. If you get fooled into thinking it's a person, then it's intelligent. Intelligent is just your perception of intelligence as opposed to a thing.
But I'm going to know it's not a person. So, you know, they have those robocalls now, right? They have like a machine talking to you on a phone. And you know, you can tell that it's not a real person.
They're getting better.
Are they?
Yeah, there was one that caught me.
It was like, really?
Yeah, it was, hey, Dan, how are you? And I'm like, who's this? And it knew. So machines now can understand our language. So they can start responding to it. So like Alexa, Siri.
Is that AI? Alexa and Siri, that's AI.
Yeah, to be able to understand natural language. That's complex. We couldn't do that a long time ago. So the story goes, this was kind of the test was if you interacted with something and you couldn't tell it was not a human, then it had artificial intelligence. So they made this program, Eliza, that was a therapist. And you would interact with the therapist and you'd say, well, I've been having a lot of trouble with my mother lately. And the therapist would come back and would say, tell me more about your mother, because it would pick out mother.
Whoa.
And it fooled people for a very long time. Eventually, people found out that this was a machine, so it wasn't intelligent enough. But then a lot of people still use this application, even though they know it's a fake, because they like having the therapist.
They want to vent. They want to listen. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope, and we are speaking with Dan Schwartz today about artificial intelligence and what makes something intelligent. How do you know when something is intelligent?
So you're right. I think a lot of people learning, and certainly as educators, that we look at learning as the key as opposed to some native capacity. So the big breakthrough in artificial intelligence, usually they are trying to make decisions where there's not an algorithmic guaranteed correct answer. So they're figuring things out where it's not guaranteed. Calculator, it's guaranteed. 2 + 2 = 4.
Right.
You can prove it. So this was the early days, was how do you make a program that can't follow a guaranteed procedure to try and figure out problems. Now the big change is that the systems are able to get direct perceptual input.
Okay, explain. What does that mean?
So you started out by saying that you need the teacher to look at the emotions and mood in the room.
Right.
So now there are systems that you put a video camera up in the corner of the room and it takes in all the video and it can come back and tell you what is the emotion each child is feeling.
Wait, how does it know the emotion? It can read the facial cues well as a human?
Pretty well.
Wow.
And I'm not so good at reading facial cues, so I'm not sure I'm the standard on that one, but at least I'm not a human standard on that. So the perceptual input is the videotape. It's direct, right? It's reading the sensory information and making sense of that. And then it learns. It gets better at it because you come back and you say, no, that was a mistake. Change it. It should be like this. So this is a big breakthrough, right? And so, yes, The computer can now sit in the corner and tell you what the kids are feeling in the classroom.
Wow.
Yeah. So how do you use that? Why? I mean, the amount of creativity. So here's another one that's sort of a retort to the thing you said. There's a company that makes a cell phone app, and you put the cell phone in the middle of the classroom, and at the end of the period, it'll tell you how much time you, the teacher, talk and how much time the students talk.
I know. That was one of my students.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
TeachFX.
That was done at Stanford.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So this is an example of AI. This is an example of it doing something that you claim only teachers can do.
Wait. Why is that AI? To me, it's picking up a difference in voices, and it's not like thinking. It's just picking up a difference in voice. How is that not just a tape recorder picking up a difference in voices?
Well, but picking up that difference is non-trivial.
Okay.
And it goes further. It actually transcribes what people are saying. It can get the teacher pretty well. We still have trouble with kids' voices. They're more variable.
Right. That's what they said.
But it can hear the audio stream and turn it into text. That's
well,
a lot of skill.
A lot of computers do that now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can talk into my phone. Like when I'm driving a car and I don't want to send a text because I'm driving, my phone will say, do you want to send a text? What do you want it to say? And I'll say, and they'll say, this is okay to send. And I say, yes.
So it seems pretty intelligent to me.
Yeah, no, that's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. So then those systems have a very restricted vocabulary.
So if I said supercalifragilistic, it would say, I'm sorry, I don't understand that word.
Would you repeat that, please? But, you know, they're getting better. They can, you can make fairly complex queries with Alexa, things like that. So this ability to take in the perceptual. So there's this information, then you find the structure in it, and then you can figure out what's going on. So breakthroughs in x-rays, you know, they see the computer gets lots and lots of x-rays, which is the direct input, and then it tries to find the patterns. They take a lot of time to learn this, you know, a lot of computers that are working simultaneously to figure this out. So it's very expensive still. So the question is, you know, how will this get executed? So I don't think it's very long from now where I will go to Alexa and I say, Alexa, I need to do my homework. What should I work on? And I'm tired. And Alexa can come back and give me an answer. It could say things like, well, you've been really doing quite well in these units of your homework, so I think it's time for you to study something that's really difficult for you. And don't worry about being tired. Now's a good time to do it.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Well,
that's coming down the line. Whether it's good advice or not, I don't know.
I would say, no, when you're tired. I thought you were going to say, Alexa was going to say, don't worry, I got this. I'll do all your homework for you. I literally thought that's what you were going to say. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. And we're speaking with Dan Schwartz, talking about artificial intelligence and the future of what AI will do for education.
So let me give one more example. So my lab created a program called a teachable agent. And what the student does is they teach this computer character that's on the screen. You know, they could teach it about, say, global warming. You know, about how the greenhouse effect traps sunlight and heat, things like that. And then based on what they've taught the agent can then answer questions that you've never taught it.
Okay, just to be clear, the agent is...
It's a computer character that I am teaching as though it were an actual pupil.
Okay, and the student is doing the teaching.
The student is learning by teaching the pupil.
So first they have to learn the information at some point.
Yes. But as you know, by teaching, you learn it better.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I've learned a little bit about this, and now I'm trying to execute by teaching my computerized pupil. My pupil has some artificial intelligence. And so based on what it's taught, it then starts to reason and answer questions. So we would have different kids program different pupils, and then their teachable agents, their pupils, would sit in a game show and answer questions from a host that the kid had never taught directly. Turns out this was golden. We did a study where we had the kid teach the agent, or they thought they were just using this new computer program, but it had no cover story that you're teaching this pupil. And then the agent, the computer program, would answer the question. And if you thought that was your work that was being evaluated and it was wrong, you shut down. You just, you as a student, you stop trying because you failed. Because
your pupil
was wrong. This is me answering.
I'm the student.
I answer. If I get it wrong, I'm quiet.
I bury it. Oh, yeah.
If my agent gets it wrong, I suddenly go, I'm so sorry. I didn't teach you well. Let me figure this out so I can teach you better.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's kind of a surprise that comes from AI.
I like that.
You wouldn't have known that.
Yeah. I definitely would not have known that. And you can see, I mean, you always have known that teaching someone else is a way to help you really learn and cement your understanding.
That's right.
So that makes sense. And I just wouldn't know that there would be such sort of pride of ownership, right? That would cause you to say, oh, wait, I feel so bad. I'm so sorry. Let me try again. You could see them even saying, I'm so sorry, but the let me try again and teach you better, that's a surprise to me.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like a pet, you know. There was this Tamagotchi, I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, same thing.
You have to keep the pet alive. You have to feed it and do all this stuff.
And you buy the narrative even though you know it's not real.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so they're buying the narrative. I get it. So if you think about there's this concept called machine learning that I, in my limited knowledge, this is totally different, right? Machine learning, is that not AI? Do we not?
Yeah, it is
AI?
Yeah, it's basically, it's one of the algorithms. So machine learning is a way for the computer to learn from input and self-correct rather than me having to predefine all the rules that it needs to follow to be intelligent.
Right. So I'm picturing there are schools out there where kids are sitting in front of computer monitors and they're running through these exercises. And when they get something right, the computer knows to go, to give them this kind of problem. And if they get it wrong, the computer knows to give them another kind of problem.
Yeah.
So
this originally was done by hand. You'd write these intelligent programs that, based on the kid's performance, the program could figure out what's the next problem. Should it be easier? Should it be a portion of the problem they missed? And so now the systems are figuring that out by themselves so that they don't have to be programmed up front.
So that's learning.
Yeah, that's learning. So that's your definition.
They need it.
And so there's all sorts of different algorithms and ways that you can set up the computer to learn, and some are more efficient than others.
Wow.
So, I don't know if you've noticed on your cell phone, like if you talk into it and it translates for you, like you say to your cell phone, find me a grocery store nearby.
Yeah.
And it does that.
Yeah.
But if you're not online, like if you're not connected to a cell tower, it doesn't do that. So what's happening is your query is going to some giant server farm with, billions of gigabytes of stuff. And then it's figuring out what it is you meant, and then it sends it back, the answer back to your phone, and then the phone responds. So part of the thing is every query you make is new information for that giant system to learn more about how it should respond and think.
Aha. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Dan Schwartz talking about artificial intelligence and its use and how it's being used now and how it's going to be used in the future in education. We'll bring that next on SiriusXM Insight 121.
Students focus on what they were told, not paying attention to the situation.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
So they're not going to see anything new because they're so busy trying to copy what you told them.
From the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Dan Schwartz today about artificial intelligence, and particularly artificial intelligence in schools and classrooms. And at the beginning of the show, Dan said to me, do you think computers, robots, etc., will ever replace a teacher? And I said, no. I'm going to throw it back to Dan.
So I think I agree with you. There are industries where I think AI, there's a real fear it's going to displace people, like trucking. If you have a bunch of systems that can drive themselves, there's a lot of truckers that are out of work.
But that was a good thing because the truckers fall asleep at the road and whatnot, right?
But the truckers would like a job.
Okay, yes, sure.
Right.
Yes.
And so automation often displaces jobs. In the classroom, I think you think of it as more, it's augmentation. It's going to enable the teacher to do things that they can't do easily. So here's another example of AI. Google Glass is these glasses that you wear. They have a little camera, and they can see the world, you know, just like a pair of glasses. They have a camera pointing out. And then they can also project things on the glass so you can see stuff.
Okay.
Right. So like you're looking around and suddenly a Wikipedia page would show up on your glasses, something like that. So what they've done is now they're using this with children who are on the spectrum. They have autism, and they give them the glass. And what the glass does is it sort of shows the target of the person's face that they're looking at so that the child – so it'll put a little square around the face. So the child will look at the square, which if you're autistic, you often don't look at people's faces.
Right.
If you're a parent and your child is now looking at you in the face, this is huge. Suddenly the child is oriented to the social cues that are coming from you. Right. So this glass can go further. It can help the child. It can say things like it can tell the child, it'll label the emotion. So if I'm looking at you and you smile, it can label the emotion for the child so they understand that you're smiling. And this is sort of how you teach kids with autism. You show them cards and you label them.
Right.
Turns out if you do it in the real world, it's just explosive for them.
It's way better. Instead of showing a picture of a happy face and saying, this means someone is happy. When mm-hmm. someone smiles, they're happy. This is way better.
This artificial intelligence figures out what the emotion is. It tells the kid, and the kid's response is, I'm a mind reader.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So this is an example where it's augmenting. It's not replacing anybody, right? It's helping do things that are hard or incredibly repetitive for humans to do.
So I got to think... humans get it wrong, right? So you can read emotion happy or sad, but someone is crying because they're laughing so hard. And that's a confusing thing. I'm just using that as an example. Yeah. But
So I know where you're going. So a lot of people are worried about machines run amok.
Yeah.
And in particular, you know, now that we have systems that are learning based on the input, if the input is biased, if it's only showing some subpopulation, then the system's going to learn bias. Right.
Right. That's a problem.
It is a problem. Although part of me has to admit, I worry. Okay. Don't get me in trouble for saying this.
I won't.
I worry a little more about stupid people than stupid machines.
Oh, you're so busted. Okay. I can understand that. No, that's what I was saying kind of about the truck drivers. Like, I would rather a machine who's going to be much safer drive that truck. A machine isn't going to get tired. A machine isn't going to get, drunk, whatever. No offense to truck drivers.
Case of education, I don't think that's the scenario. I think the scenario is suddenly you're getting a lot more information. So if you're – one of the big challenges of education is it's really data thin. You know, we just don't – you get a test score on your kid at the end of the year.
Right.
You know, and that's sort of it. And or you get a grade report at the end of the quarter or semester. That's really data thin. Now that these systems are able to – take in more information, we'll be able to get more information. So I'll give you some examples.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Dan Schwartz, and he's going to give us some examples of artificial intelligence and the data that the schools are going to get because of this.
So I'm going to make up some examples.
Okay. Make it up, Dan.
So as a student, for me to learn, I need lots of feedback.
Yeah. Right?
And there's a huge bottleneck because if I'm relying on the teacher and the teacher has 25, 30 kids, it's really hard to get the feedback to the kid because it takes a lot of time. Well, there are programs now that are automatically grading essays and giving feedback.
I had 150 kids. It's not 25.
Fine. You had 150. So you even more want something with some intelligence that can get the kids feedback in time to improve their performance. So a student at Stanford, I was on his dissertation committee, he created a system that could give attending physicians feedback on the quality of the feedback they were giving to the residents. So I'm a doctor, I give feedback, I fill out a form. It tends to be generic. It's things like, good job, keep what you're up, you know, keep doing what you're up to. You should try harder. This is generic, it's not useful. This system could detect that in the feedback from the doctor and tell the doctor, you're not being specific enough. Please be more specific. So this is feedback to the doctor that improves feedback to the kid. So that's how this AI is going to show up. It's going to make it so that we can get a lot more feedback to everybody. The teacher, I didn't know I was talking too much. This AI told me. The teacher, I didn't realize half the class was sleeping. Right? I got feedback.
Okay, that's bad. You don't need a camera for that. But I do see what you're saying about it. It takes me so long.
I was thinking about a college lecture with 800 students.
Yeah.
You can't see them. You don't know.
I see what you're saying. You don't know who's sleeping. Yeah, I can see who's sleeping. Or 800 kids. I could totally see.
Yeah, but you're a super teacher.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You're not someone who just happened to get a PhD in physics and now has to teach. Yeah.
So here's my question. What are the ethical implications then? The computer decides they don't like the point of view of the kid who wrote this paper. They're going to mark it down.
Yeah.
Because they're not just looking for grammar and writing here. Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming they're looking at content.
Yeah.
So are you afraid of sort of the ethical implications?
So I worry a lot about automation that prescribes the future of people's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the same time, you want to detect these problems and then you fix them. As opposed to saying we shouldn't do it because there might be a problem. So this is generally what happens. The bias in the algorithm, and you say that as though the testing system we have right now isn't incredibly biased.
I completely agree. It is totally biased. Right. I completely agree.
So you find that bias, and you help the machine learn a better way to do it. So I think it's a big concern. You probably don't want automatic decision making. At levels that make big differences in people's lives.
So it's okay if they grade the paper a little bit wrong, but it's not okay if they're making suspension or expulsion decisions based on the machine.
So that's going on.
What do you mean that's going on?
There's systems that are looking for early warning signs of dropout. And they sit there and they say, turns out at one college, the early warning sign is if you have not declared a major by halfway through your sophomore year, your odds of dropping out are much higher.
Whoa.
And the system finds this. And it tells the administrators, this is a pain point. So fix it.
So
it's augmenting. It's not replacing.
It's augmenting. It's not replacing.
Yeah.
I feel better about that. It's not going to be Blade Runner. I get it. I'm feeling a little bit
more. Well, I wouldn't. Blade Runner has a reveal, but not for my child.
I don't know. Education is such a... It's so relationship-based.
So there was a guy who figured out how to make the computer as creative as the best ad agencies. Huh. And it got published in sort of the top scientific journal called Science. In the amount of anger around him doing this, right? Computers can't be creative. Creative has to be a mystery. You can't codify what does it. And he went out and he did it. So this is a little bit of the pushback on the teachers. There's something magical about good teachers. There's all these things. If you can codify it, you can start to create systems that can do it.
Well, and it's already doing a lot of good is what it sounds like. I mean, it's not going to go away.
Is it doing a lot of – yeah, it's just at the dawn.
Right.
So people haven't figured out how to be creative. But there are examples that you wouldn't have thought of. They augment. They get you more feedback as a learner, as a teacher, at the policy level. So the AI is going to help us handle lots and lots of data and collect it. That's very difficult for individuals to do. So it'll be augmentative.
All right, Dan. Thank you. Thanks for being my guest. Thanks for interviewing yourself.
I want to redo it. I want a do-over. Isn't that what every guest
does? You don't get a do-over. No, okay. No. And thank you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, on iTunes, and on SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.